Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here to continue our expectations series today. And today we're going to talk about two players, one on offense and one on defense. If you're following the show, you know that's kind of the format here. Brandon Stevens from the defense, Tylan Wallace from the offense. Joining me to do that is our friend Cordell Woodland from 105.7. Cordell, how you doing?
What's going on, Ken? Appreciate you having me.
Always a pleasure to talk football with you. And I really appreciate it, you coming on my show. We have more of a back and forth format, which I really appreciate when we're on the radio. Sometimes it seems like I'm dominating the conversation, but I really appreciate your thoughts. The time you've been on draft shows in particular, people have really keyed in on you and been very happy. Some people didn't know who you were, which is surprising to me at this point, because your voice is regularly heard on the interviews at the podium for various Ravens players and coaches.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's crazy to hear you say, you know, you're surprised when people don't know who I am. I'm still surprised that people know who I am every time I run into somebody. But, you know, another year coming up, man, excited. I always love this time of year when football is gearing up, ready to go. And like you mentioned, it's OTA's time, been out there, gotten to see a couple of these rookies, gotten to see some of the new faces on this team and some of the returning guys as well. So you can kind of, you know, feel it in the air that football is on its way.
It is exciting. And you know, this is our best time. It's some free time between major milestones. OTA is obviously one of them, the beginning of camp being another. We have a fair amount of dead time in here. That's not to say there's not any activity going on in there, but it's a fair amount of dead time to talk about, really set our expectations for some players for next year. We're going to start with Tylan Wallace today because, he's kind of the undercard to this pairing, certainly, in his fourth year, entering a contract year. I don't think he's the kind of player who is expecting a big payday, but there are questions about whether or not he could be a career survivor with the Ravens, perhaps as a special teams player who also contributed something on offense or perhaps as a return man.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of his avenue right now. We saw him kind of take advantage of his opportunity last year on the special teams. He had the punt return for the touchdown to win the game in overtime against the Rams. And, you know, he's shown flashes in the past game. I mean, look, he had a great preseason. I know preseason doesn't mean anything, but Tylan Wallace was the receiver to talk about when you look at last year's preseason for the Ravens. And I thought really he did himself a big enough justice to where he ended up making this team, because I don't think he was a guarantee to make that roster. So he did himself a lot of favors in the preseason and capitalized on his limited opportunities in the regular season as well. And right now he's in another good opportunity where, you know, the Ravens are looking to give guys a look at the wide receiver spot, specifically slot.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned the preseason, because I've found this on other shows as well. The guys who were available during the preseason, and in particular at the major soft tissue injury positions, which are corner and wide receiver, it happens at other positions. Don't get me wrong. Running backs, tight ends, they get it. But those two positions have a high percentage of the soft tissue injuries in camp. Those guys who can't get on the field during preseason really lose a significant developmental component to what they're doing, and a significant chance to draw the heads of the coaches too. It's a big miss when a player like JAD, who didn't have a lot of college experience, has missed all but one preseason game in his career, for example.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about it. And that's the thing, you know, for fans and, you know, a lot of us, even some of us in the media, like we're not, you know, going crazy for the preseason games. We're not super excited for those. But for guys like that, for the Tylan Wallaces of the world, you know, they need preseason. And we've seen, I mean, look at Keaton Mitchell and what he was able to do in the preseason last year. We've seen guys make a name for themselves and, more importantly, make rosters. I mean, that's just the time of year where you're allowing these guys that are fringe roster players to the opportunity to get a to give a legit look in a game like situation. And while it may not be a real game, it's a real game for them. You go back to that Ravens Commanders preseason game last year. For some of those guys, it was a real game for them. Ardarius Washington, who's flying all over the field in that game, Tylan Wallace, who we're talking about now, who's making plays. He was the best receiver and for the Ravens throughout the preseason, and even in that game as well, I believe he had a touchdown. So, you know, it's those, they understand the what the preseason means for them, and the good ones capitalize on those opportunities.
Right. There's 2 points I got to make of that, because it's great points, particularly about that Commanders game, which has been often now referred to as the greatest preseason game of all time. And the one thing of the first thing about it is, for every single Commanders player, it seemed to be a huge thing. And certainly for the Commanders owner and their coaches, it seemed to be awfully important. But I will say this also, if you look back to last year's preseason, Daryl Worley, who's a longtime veteran of the NFL, what's he, his 10th season or something by now? And, you know, he's been 18 different transactions up for him roughly in 2022 for the Ravens. So that's a guy they like, but they couldn't quite figure out how to keep on the roster all the time. He's not signed right now. The Ravens seem to have a hole at the position he plays at a split field free safety, where he was very good last year. And he, in a lot of ways, not only did he make the team with that first preseason game, but we got an extra glimpse into what he could be as a safety. And he moved to the position. You and I were watching him in camp and whatnot. And you know, it's a guy who's no longer a corner, playing safety, adapting very, very well to the thing. But he was absolutely a man among boys in that first preseason game when he's on the field in the second half. And you realize just how much it matters to have a guy in the right position at safety play after play.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And especially for the Ravens, I mean, they need that, because they want to, you know, have the three safety look. So they need somebody back there that they can trust, so that they can allow Kyle Hamilton to be that ultimate chess piece that he's so good at being. So, and look, I know you mentioned Worley and how he's on the streets right now and he's an option. They've got some of these young guys who are, you know, trying to make a name for themselves right now in OTAs. I mean, Sanase Kane, he's made a couple of plays so far in OTAs. Jordan Toles from my alma mater, Morgan State, he's getting opportunities as well. So, look, I mean, we've seen the Ravens make the most out of the Geno Stones, and it took them a couple of times, and it took them a while before they were able to, you know, kind of get something out of that, but they eventually were. And I think they're in a situation where, if you're talking about the safety position in general, when you have guys like Marcus Williams, assuming he stays healthy, and the Kyle Hamilton, you just need that guy. You just need somebody that you can trust 15, 20 yards down the field. You just need somebody that you can trust as your last line of defense. So if any of these young guys can find a way to gain the coach's trust, I do believe that they're giving them legit looks right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't doubt that they're giving him legit looks. I don't see any of those three guys specifically, Toles, Kane, or Braid, as being a back end split field safety. Sure. I see them all as dime prospects, and the Ravens may need that. We don't really know who Trenton Simpson is at this point. He's played very little in the NFL. He certainly showed flashes, and I think Orr is going to try and give him every chance to be a three-down linebacker. But because we don't know that, there's still an opportunity at dimeback. And a player like Kane, who they actually spent a draft pick on, a little bit surprisingly, is a guy obviously they love for special teams.
Yeah, I mean, and that'll be the way for any of these guys right now. Special teams is going to be the way that you kind of find your niche, you find your role. That's the first role for most of these teams, but specifically the Ravens. You have to be able to help them on special teams if you feel like you have a shot to make the back end of this roster. And you make a good point. I mean, we don't know what this defense is going to look like this year in terms of their personnel packages. Patrick Queen gave them the luxury of having two linebackers that you could keep on the field for all three downs. We don't know if Trenton Simpson will give them that right now. So, yeah, maybe we do see situations where they actually add an extra DB on the field for some of those big dime packages. So a lot of questions still to be answered in terms of what this Ravens defense is going to look like. And really the same could be said for offense as well.
We've done it as usual. We strayed completely into a lot of talk about the defense, and we're talking about Tylan Wallace. So we're gonna bring it back in here just a little bit. Wallace still has played very few total offensive snaps in his career, just 133 pass snaps in his career with 13 targets. Nothing really impressive about the statistics. 0.53 yards per route run. You couldn't have five eligible receivers doing that and have 2.65 yards per pass play. So, his career certainly has not been impressive in terms of his receiving, and yet a lot of that is based on Jackson's connection, obviously, with other receivers. We don't know what he would be if he were really thrust into a role where he had to be trusted. But so far, obviously, he's never carried the football either as a runner, which I was a little surprised by. I thought I remembered him carrying the football before.
Yeah, I mean, look, like you said, his numbers aren't going to be overly impressive. He hasn't had a lot of opportunities offensively. And just to be frank, I mean, the people that have been ahead of him have just been simply better than him. I mean, you're not putting him in there over the core that they've had recently of Zay Flowers, Bateman, even Aguilar, Beckham. You weren't putting him ahead of those guys. His shot would have been when the James Prochets of the world were here. And even then, it was tough for him to really get in. Now, granted, they had a different offensive style at that time. They were going with more heavier sets at that point. They weren't as spread. So now with Todd Monken there, and like I said earlier, I do think that there is an avenue for there to be, if nothing else, a rotation of some of these guys in the slot when they want to use a true wide receiver there. If they don't want to put the Likelys or Andrew split out there, could we see a Tylan Wallace there? Obviously Nelson Aguilar, he'll be thrown in there. Zay, they use inside and out. But Tez Walker, he's another one now, a draft pick. What does he look like? I think he's going to take a little bit of time. So this is kind of the time for, I think, Tylan Wallace to kind of assert himself into that role. And look, there's no Devin Duvernay here now. So obviously the return game is wide open. He got an opportunity after he returned that punt return. They like Justice Hill as well. So that's another spot. He's in a situation where he's competing for two different spots right now. And it's important for him to win at least one of them.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think the Deontay Hardy signing in particular kind of directly impedes him again in a way. I mean, obviously impedes him as a return man, because I think Hardy's going to return everything they have, kickoffs and punts. Not 100% sure of that. Maybe you've seen in OTAs who's back there fielding kicks and whatnot, because that's always a nice thing to look at. I'll give you a chance to respond to that. But also, I mean, I think Hardy's probably ahead of him on the wide receiver depth chart, given the fact that he's done a little bit more in his time with other teams.
Yeah, I mean, and he gives them what they need, the deep threat. Hardy has the ability to take the top off of defense. And I mean, and not consistently, he's another one that, while he has more tape, as on field as a receiver than Tylan Wallace does, he's been in a similar situation where there wasn't a lot in that room. So he's kind of on the field by default. But he definitely has his moments. And in terms of him being a specialist, yeah, I mean, they signed him to be the kick return specialist. He hasn't been there, so we haven't gotten to see him to this point. But I would have to imagine that Wallace's name is still going to be in the hat. And look, anything can happen. I mean, the Ravens have shown that they'll put more value or more trust into their own over an external guy any day. So while I agree, I think Hardy was he was definitely signed to be in that role. If Wallace goes out there and outdoes him, what are they going to do? I don't think it'll be any skin off their back to revert back to Wallace or Justice Hill for that sake if he wins it as well.
There is a slight difference in terms of Hardy's contract. He has guaranteed money, and almost the entire salary is guaranteed. It's kind of similar to the Arthur Maulette situation last year, where I think, as we were going through camp, I wasn't sure Maulette was going to make it until I heard about the guaranteed money. And then I said, oh no, he's going to make it because of that. It is a sunk cost, but they also like him a certain amount, and they'll make that exchange before they have to decide the guy's not good enough after he comes back from an injury. So, and it turned out Mullett ended up being quite valuable, I'd say, for the Ravens, yeah. And they obviously re-signed him. Yeah. What else did I want to say? Is his roster spot secure this year in terms of Wallace?
Is it secure? I mean, I have to think about the receivers. You got Bateman, you got Zay, you got Aguilar, you got Walker. Those guys are going to be there. So yep. Wallace is in a spot again where he's competing to be, you know, kind of the last wide receiver on the roster. Malik Cunningham, you could throw his name into the hat right now as well. I think he's in the same situation he was in last preseason, to be honest with you, to where he's a bubble guy, and if he does, he's in a spot to where he could again go out there and be the best receiver that they have in the preseason. It wouldn't shock me if that's the case, but is that something that, and I think they'll keep, I think it'll take for him to really simply not look the part for him to not make this team. I'd be surprised, to be honest with you. At this point, I'd be surprised, especially with the new kickoff rules and things like that. And, you know, and Chris Horton, when we spoke to him last week, he made a really good point that this is now, they're having to look at this as an offensive play at this point. It's no longer like you're looking at this like a special team situation. They're drawing these returns up as if it's an actual play call. So you're going to see different things happening. You're going to see craziness. You're going to see reverses and stuff like that. You'd see them every now and then, but I'm at the point now where I'm approaching this season in terms of the kickoffs to where I'm preparing myself to see things that I haven't seen before.
I think that is one of the exciting things about this year is just how that the kickoff develops. So I'm looking forward to it too. The one thing I'd say about Wallace in terms of being in the same position as last year, the big difference for any player going from year three to year four is there's more sand out of the hourglass in terms of the option value the team has. So last year in the preseason, they could look forward to Wallace's option value in year four as being meaningful to them. They don't own any part of Tylan Wallace's future at this point. You know, year five plus, there's no value. I mean, you know, just being realistic about it, there's no possible value coming out of a comp pick for him because he's not going to make the right minimum for the formula. So it's just a matter of is he good enough this year? Mm-hmm. And that's why you see a lot of fourth-year players get to the end of the camp, and those are the guys who are most frequently traded for conditional sevenths and whatnot when a team has a surplus of talent. Occasionally, you'll be able to match up with a one-for-one transaction where you happen to have a surplus at the position the other team needs and vice versa. But more than likely, I think, you know, it is one of the really likely things. Cut is a possibility, traded for a conditional seventh, and I'd say make the team. I'd like to hear your handicapping of that situation, but I'd put it as maybe 10% to be traded for a conditional, 60% make the team, 10% conditional seventh, and 30% cut.
Yeah, I would probably lean more that he, again, you know, makes the back end of the roster. He's probably the last wide receiver on the depth chart. That's my most likely option. But I could see a scenario where he is dealt, you know, because he gives value as a returner as well. And if he can go to a team kind of like what I mentioned in Hardy's situation where he was playing for a team who had a depleted wide receiver core, if there's a team that really has no – you know, they're not looking to win right now, or they just need somebody that can run a route, somebody that can return a punt or something like that. Sure. I mean, the Ravens, they value those late round picks anyway. So it wouldn't shock me if that, I think that's definitely above him being cut for me right now, if they can find a solid dance partner, obviously.
All right. So let's talk about what makes a good season for Tylan Wallace and what makes a great season. I tell the folks who come on the show, I do this as a 60th and 80th percentile, but everyone's free to make their own judgment about what constitutes a good and great season. But what makes a good season for you for Tylan Wallace?
Yeah, I would say a good season for me for Tylan Wallace is if he is a consistent part of this rotation of this wide receiver group. If he is, you know, I don't know if he necessarily has to put up the numbers that Nelson Aguilar put up last year, but if he could just kind of be a guy that can show himself to to be dependable if somebody goes down and gets hurt and he's thrusted in there? Can he show up on third downs? Like, I'm not looking for Tylan Wallace to come out there and all of a sudden be a 100-yard receiver or get 70-plus receptions or anything like that. Just being realistic, if he can go out there and show that he can be reliable, like a poor man's Tyler Boyd or something like that, I think that would be serviceable for them. They need somebody that can just be quarterback friendly on schedule, and that on schedule in their passing game is something that's necessary in general. But I just think if he can be a consistent part of the rotation, if they can show, if he can show that they can trust him in third down situations, or again, if somebody gets hurt and he can kind of step in and all of a sudden, you know, he looks like a mainstay in that rotation, I think that's a good seat, because we're talking about a guy, as we mentioned earlier, who has really shown little to nothing on the offensive end, granted, yep, mostly due to lack of opportunities.
Right. It's certainly true. It's not had good opportunities so far. My good season, I'm going to be a little more simple and a much lower bar, makes the team regardless of the circumstances, continues to play a key role on special teams. I think he'll have more involvement in coverage this year, and I think he needs to, that's an area where he needs to play well, whereas he lost some of his coverage snaps because he was a key return man for them last year. So I think he's back to being a coverage guy with Hardy here. Tackling and playmaking, I'd like to see a slight improvement in, and I think in a good season he would. And he does enough to be considered a Ravens survivor who might continue on the handshake crew, a vet minimum player on an ongoing basis that provides you that roster fungibility at the end, where you're really working with 57 or 58 slots or 59 slots. The NFL actually increased it by two this year to allow teams to carry two more guys that start the season on IR. But this is a place where you know, he could provide value. Brent Urban and Anthony Levine and others have in the past.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt. I mean, you mentioned the Brent Urbans and those guys. Yeah, the handshake crew, that's definitely who that is. And really, yeah, I mean, if he can, I think a good season as a whole is if he, like you said, makes the roster for sure. But if he can show that he can stay on the field, if whether that's consistently being a part of the special teams, whether that's consistently being a part of this wide receiver rotation group, that I think would be good enough.
All right. How about a great season? What's a great season to you?
A great season for me would be he wins the return job and he's their everyday returner, or at least their everyday kickoffs or, you know, punt return, one of them, because it could be a situation where they switch it up for either of the two right now. We'll see how they decide to go about it. But I think that would have to be a part of it. And give me a couple of receiving touchdowns. I mean, it doesn't have to be anything great. I'm not talking about anything more than maybe three, you know, but something. Give me some. I would like to see whatever he's giving on the return game have that translate on the offensive side. We didn't really get to see that with Devin Duvernay. You know, his return skills translate to when he gets the ball in his hands on the offensive side. So if Wallace could do that and maybe he gets involved in some of those jet sweeps and stuff like that, just become an extra weapon. You know, if he can show that he's a weapon for this team, I would say that's a great season for him.
All right. Well, fair enough. I'm much more general, or maybe I'm not. You're pretty general too, but I'd say he's forced into a bigger role due to circumstance and he excels at that. I'm not picky. It could come as a return man, right. That's fine if that's all it is. It also could come with a bigger share of wide receiver snaps and targets if they have a nuclear situation, obviously, on there. And again, soft tissue injury is very prevalent. Almost nobody gets through 17 games at wide receiver these days, or few people do. And I think regardless, he's a four-unit core ST player in a great season, as I would see it. If any of those happen, by the way, if Deontay Hardy is not who the Ravens want him to be, that's a bad thing for the Ravens. If the wide receivers are in such disarray that Tylan Wallace is getting snaps, both those things are very bad things for the Baltimore Ravens. It's good things for Tylan. Could be good for Tylan.
Good things for Tylan, but like you said, it means that things didn't go according to plan for Baltimore.
All right. All right, there you go. Well, let's move on. We spent about 23 minutes on Tylan Wallace talking about the secondary here. Let's talk about Brandon Stevens a little bit. And obviously, he's part of a much more complex situation. The Ravens really have a web of problems to solve in terms of their secondary. They've got a lot of talent. It's just how they deploy it in that secondary.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a guy that fits their mold of versatility. You know, that's kind of been the Ravens' mantra these last couple of years, and he's a part of that. A guy that came in as a safety and really thrown in there right away due to injury, and after that, he's a corner. And it's it. And what I like about Brandon Stevens is just you see the development in him. You see the desire to get better every time he's on the field. So he's one of my favorite players on the team. It's been that way really since he was a rookie, because he really showed me something. I think playing defensive back in the NFL is one of the toughest things to do in sports. You can't do anything. You can't touch him. You can't hit him. You got to basically let him catch the ball and, let him make a football move before you hit him. I mean, I'm losing track of the rights that DBs are losing by the hour. So anytime you can be not just a functional DB, but a guy that can, you know, actually help your defense on a daily basis, you get my respect. So I'm a big fan of Brandon Stevens for sure.
Well, I certainly am as well. If you look at last year, what he did for this team is pretty remarkable, because he started out, he was the heir apparent at slot corner at the beginning of training camp, and they'd put him there. And then they had other injuries that they just couldn't have him there. They needed him on the outside at corner. They've moved him to right corner, and he effectively played every snap the whole year. He did miss one game due to injury, but all the other games, he basically played every snap. He was second on the team in percentage of defensive snaps played. Only Patrick Queen played more. And there were only three guys at above 90%. He was in there at 93%. But his season it bifurcated, because he had a great, great start to that season. 6.1 yards per target through week 12, and then 8.3 yards per target the rest of the way. Three of his five penalties came in the last five games. That includes the playoffs. And he was early in the season, he was among the most targeted defensive backs in the entire football league, always like jockeying with others for within one target of the most in the whole league. And he only allowed two touchdowns the whole year. 82.4 opposition passer rating is really good in today's NFL. A lot to like about this year, but it is a little concerning that in year three, he still kind of wore down a little bit as the season went on.
Yeah, and honestly, I feel like when just looking at it, I think as the year went on, they started to put more on his plate. He started to shadow receivers. You think back to that Chargers game, he was pretty much the main guy on Keenan Allen a lot of those times. You think back to that Bengals game, he's shadowing Jamar Chase a lot of the times. And the back end of the season, I mean, they're playing some good wide receiver groups that, granted, they still held their own and still dominated for the most part. I just think, like you said, his start was so good that inevitably the numbers would start to balance out a little bit. The eye test, though, you know, I didn't really see too much.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Much of a drop-off from him. Sure, he started to give up a little more down a stretch than he did earlier in the season. But like I said, you look at their December schedule and the teams that they were playing. I mean, they played the best of the best during that time and going into the postseason as well. So definitely a lot to like from Brandon Stevens. I like that he was able to use his physicality. I like, for the most part, he wasn't a guy that attracted penalties, because that was a problem for him in years past. Being a little too handsy, being a little too aggressive, and in a large part to not being able to find the ball in the air. And that's still a little bit of an issue for him. But that's kind of my thing. And I know you didn't ask me about that, but if I'm looking at something that I want to see Brandon Stevens take a step in going forward, it's really, you know, the turnovers, making plays on the football.
I would agree with that. I think Brandon, even though I think Brandon was better, I think there's another level to reach here. He's a C-plus player now, maybe in terms of finding the football. We see a player like JAD in the limited time we've actually gotten to see him, whether that's, you know, in preseason and even in camp, really even it just has the hardest time finding the football. Mm-hmm. And part of that is not being able to trust yourself, to have your hand on the receiver. And I'm talking about soft touch, nothing to draw a foul. And be able to turn back and look into the backfield and find the ball. But JAD seems so focused on staying in phase with his feet that he can't really trust himself to still have the guy. I don't think we're going to have that problem with Nate Wiggins at all. There is the ultimate guy who trusts his own makeup speed. And how's he looked at camp so far?
I mean, it's still, you know, finding his footing, to be honest. Now, granted, it's tough to really judge the passing game right now, both offensively or defensively, because Lamar hasn't been in OTAs for the most part. So the quarterback play is downright pitiful. I'm going to be honest. Yeah. It's been bad. So you're getting some guys that are gifted some interceptions. You're having some times where they make a couple of throws. But yeah, I mean, it's tough to gauge right now. It's been up and down. Sometimes I see him stride for stride with guys, and I've also seen him get beat a couple of times, but that's what you expect in OTAs right now. What I like about him, I remember talking to him at rookie mini camp, and he talked about the biggest adjustment he thinks he'll have to make is just learning what he can and can't do as a DB in the professional ranks, as opposed to college. College, you could beat those dudes up and down the field. Professional, you know, you can't touch them. You can't breathe on these guys. So you have to really learn how to trust your technique while also, in his case, still wanting to be aggressive and playing the ball and trying to make plays. I think the kid will be fine all in all, though.
I love hearing that, because Wiggins is a guy, among all else, who could trust his ability more than needing to trust his technique. You know, he's almost Sanders-like in that respect, in terms of having that. And if you look at what he did last year, I mean, he's one of the few guys who matches up the physical gifts with the unbelievable coverage statistics with it. 4.3 yards per target and all the other things that went with that in terms of passer rating and whatnot, being in the 40s. I love to see a guy run 428. I love it even more when a guy runs 428 and the coverage statistics are corroborative. He only had one penalty last year. That's a guy who's not getting grabby because he trusts his makeup speed.
Yeah. I mean, and that's going to be important, because he doesn't have, like, obviously the physical stature to sit there and beat guys up and do all that stuff. So the fact that he does have good footwork, the fact that he does have good eyes, the fact that he trusts his eyes, and he's a confident player. I can tell you that right now. He's not short on confidence, and that's good, because to play the cornerback position, you have to, you know, you brought up Deion, and I'm not, you know, obviously we're not comparing him to Deion, but that's right. What he had. Deion had that confidence to be able to, Deion wasn't the biggest corner either, but he had the confidence and the wherewithal and the skill to be able to do that. But if you don't have the confidence to back up that type of skill level, you're kind of just waiting for something bad to happen. And I don't get the sense that Wiggins is a guy that's going to kind of wait and let the game necessarily come to him. He's going to kind of force his impact on it. And I think in his case, that'll work.
Yeah, Marcus Peters, as opposed to people. So, you know, a guy who's going to try and make a play on the football isn't going to be intimidated against doing that at the NFL level. Getting back to Stevens for a second, the physicality in his game has been something we've really loved. I love the way he works a receiver towards the boundary. I really like his downhill tackling in terms of what he's done that. I hope we get that from Wiggins, but I don't want to make this about Wiggins. Stevens has really provided that in great thing. I do think that the scheme under McDonald really benefited all of the underneath corners, all three of the corners, period, to have a too high shell running from a lot of the time. You rotate out of that. You're always running some game off that, it seemed like. Yeah. Lots of matchup zone on both sides. But basically, those corners pretty much always knew they had help and could trust their help under McDonald. It is something I want to try and get to get an opinion from you is do you think – the system is going to be very similar under Orr, or do you think there'll be changes to it that'll be very non-McDonald-esque?
I mean, that's what I've been trying to figure out because, you know, when we talked to John at Zach Orr's introductory press conference, he had mentioned how this is a scheme that they've been building for years. You know, it's not – and that actually gave me a little bit of peace with the situation. Because it's not like it's a situation where Mike McDonald came in and he built this thing from scratch. And now that he's gone, the scheme goes with him. He came in and he was one of the guys that was just another author of the book. You know, that's kind of what it was. He added his wrinkle. He added his flavor. And the biggest thing is that I think McDonald brought that we're curious to see what Zach Orr does is the in-game adjustments. That's the biggest question mark I have right now. But in terms of the scheme, it does seem to be, for the most part, alike. You know, I asked Zach Orr the other day when we talked to him, how much terminology does he feel like he has to change? Is not just because he's taken over from Mike McDonald, but also, look, you've got quite a few defensive players from last year that have not only left, but have stayed in the division, you know? So how much of that are you keeping the same? And he said it, you know, pretty much they weren't changing a lot. They didn't have to change a lot with the terminology. And Kyle Hamilton spoke the other day and said that, you know, pretty much this scheme is easy to kind of pass down to the rookies. So from what he said, it didn't sound like they had changed a whole lot of what they were doing because Kyle and those guys are able to kind of just bring these rookies along. And the good thing is, so far in OTAs to this point, there hasn't been a lot of miscommunications. And that's kind of what you look for when you get the change in defensive coordinator and stuff like that. You want to see, are guys still on the same page? And for the most part, it seems like they have been.
That is really good to hear. You know, McDonald, I thought there were other things McDonald brought to it, but we don't need to go into every single thing. But I liked the fact that it was simplified relative to Wink. I actually thought Wink was a pretty good in-game adjuster too, but McDonald is at another level in terms of that. But Wink, if you look back to previous Ravens defensive coordinators, I mean, as great as that group has been, and it's been a very classy line, Wink was really one of the special ones. I mean, I would have said before McDonald came along, he was in the top three with Lewis and who am I forgetting? Ryan, Lewis and Ryan.
But
every one of them really has been good. Madison has been the only guy who's been kind of just an average guy, and you know, most of them went on to big things. The other thing I hear a lot is people getting upset that John Harbaugh is losing all the coaches that he's going. I mean, does that kind of irk you in some way too? I mean, obviously, they've lost a lot of coaching talent, but that's what's supposed to happen when you're successful. And you look at successful coaches, they change jobs every 2 years. That's the deal until they, you know, get an ultimate prize like McDonald has now.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, that is what happens when you have a good team, coaches go, and you can't keep all your coaches. You know, you can't keep everybody around. Guys want promotions. Guys want, you know, other opportunities for themselves. So that's kind of the way that it goes. But I do think I'm curious to see how the overturn of coaches will impact this team, because it also goes along with a lot of overturn, I feel like, on the field as well. So, you know, the Ravens, they didn't make a big to-do about some of their coaching hires or some of their coaching changes, even some of them in-house. So it some of it has been kind of like, I just want to see how it impacts them as a team. I still think they're a very talented team, but this was a big offseason for them with a lot of overturn from coaches to player personnel. So I just think in its totality, I'm curious to see how it impacts what this team looks like this year.
Yeah, it's a very good point. Let's get back to Stevens for a second, because there's something I want to try and read the tea leaves on with you. Is he's obviously one of the breakout players of last year, one of the players whose play was at such a level that you said developmentally, now we have a different trajectory for this guy. The other one is Tyler Linderbaum, who had not a good rookie year, particularly as a pass blocker, improved tremendously in that regard in his second year. But Stevens and Linderbaum, the two guys, one on each side of the ball. With Stevens being a third-year player, the question has now arisen. Linderbaum is obviously junior to that and also has a fifth-year option, so it's not really the same timeline. But with Stevens, the question is, this would have been a reasonable offseason to try and sign him to an extension, deal with the visible benefit on the table, potentially get a slightly team-friendly deal. And what do you read out of the fact that it hasn't happened to date?
Nothing just yet, because I still think there's time. I felt like this makes sense to make this happen this offseason. I still am kind of leaning that it might still happen before camp starts, or maybe even during camp. You know, it's kind of around the same time of Broderick Washington getting his deal last year. So it's definitely a possibility still. And I would imagine that the Ravens are open to doing it. It's, you know, what does Stevens feel? Does he feel like he has another leap left in him this year to where he could test the market and really do well for himself? Or, you know, does he want to take the money now and kind of get it out of the way and not have to deal with the uncertainty of his future? But yeah, if I'm the Ravens, I'm trying to make that happen, you know, kind of as soon as possible, because if nothing else, if it is done, you would imagine it's kind of a good bargain deal for the Ravens.
Right. And always divisible benefit. And because of that, and a lot of the risk is related to injury, he's not going to play in the preseason, but I think you pretty much have until the beginning of the regular season to potentially make a deal still at this point, if without him taking additional risk to the point that he says, you know what, if we're at this point, I'm just going to play it out and we'll go through to the end and I'll make more money. I guess the player whose fate is somewhat intertwined with his, at least as I see it, is Marlon Humphrey. Do you see a situation where the Ravens might keep both of them
after this season?
Yeah.
I think it depends on what Marlon looks like. Honestly, if Marlon looks like Marlon again, I don't see the Ravens wanting to move on from Marlon Humphrey. I don't think that's what's happening here. I think if they had it their way, Marlon looks like Marlon and all is well, and we're not even, it's a no-brainer at that point. And you could possibly still, that obviously would make it a little trickier when it comes to Stevens, because you just used a first round pick on Wiggins and you drafted TJ Tampa later on in the draft. So something's got to shake at some point. How much money are you willing to tie up into that? And if Brandon Stevens, assuming they don't get the deal done with Stevens before the start of the season, and we are talking about this now in next offseason, if Stevens had another good year again, I would struggle to see them bringing him back if Marlon looks the part again this year.
All right, so let's talk about Marlon for just a second. It's a little bit off topic, but I think it's of interest to people. Marlon, obviously been a physical player, been a great slot corner when the Ravens have asked him to play there. The Ravens currently have a need at this Geno Stone position, the split field deep safety, something, you know, that really understands zone responsibilities, what the other players in front of you are doing. Do you see a possibility that Humphrey is deployed differently this year, whether it's on the back end on some plays, in the slot on more plays, which I think is, you know, that could be a possibility certainly, or do you see him as pretty much just still staying on the outside and whatever snaps he get are there? Maybe he's got a little bit of injury load you got to deal with anyway, and so rotation comes more naturally. Where do you sit on where they could best deploy Marlon Humphrey?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough for me to think that they go the route of putting him at safety. Not that I don't think it wouldn't work, just because I haven't seen them do it yet. So until I see them, I feel like they'd have to get almost in a desperate state to where they're willing to do something like that. They weren't able to find a safety on the market that they wanted to bring in, or none of these guys on the team show face. Brandon Stevens did tell us the other day that earlier in camp, he was getting some run at safety as well. So, I did ask him if they've had discussions of him maybe being in that hybrid role. He said they hadn't talked about that to this point. So we'll see. But he's obviously a guy that has that experience of doing that. And he has the body to be able to play back there as well. Marlon, I would probably put more stock into Marlon playing more in the slot than I would him at safety at this point. Just because, like you said, he's so good there. That's a place we've seen him at. That's a place that they've shown that they're comfortable with playing him at. He's good at the nickel blitz. He's good blowing up the screens. He's good in the run game. So you don't lose anything there. And, you know, they still have Millett, who obviously that's his role as well, is to be a part of that nickel spot rotation. But I just think Marlon will be an inside out guy. I think predominantly he'll still be outside. Like, for the most part, I think you'll still see Marlon used the same way that he has been in the past, with maybe a little increase in the percentage that you see him in the slot. I can see them doing that now with Wiggins being there. Maybe Wiggins shows that he can, you know, stick with some of these, the George Pickens of the, even though, you know, Pickens is bigger than him too. But he can run with Pickens. Maybe he can go up and actually make a play on the ball with Pickens, unlike the way that Marlon has been able to, or hasn't been able to, the last couple of seasons. So I do think that they'll experiment with playing Marlon inside a little more, just because they have more options now that they can put on the outside. They don't have to depend on the Jalen Armour Davises. They don't have to depend on, you know, the Pepe Williams of the world, Wiggins. And even if TJ Tampa finds a way to crack this rotation as well, and I don't know right now, but I do think we'll see Marlon more inside this year than we did maybe last.
Okay. I mean, I think Tampa is one of the interesting players. And the reason he's so interesting is that the Ravens are at a crossroads with both Stevens and Humphrey. Yeah. And I think they're going to want to keep them, but boy, would I really want to know who TJ Tampa is. You know, second round talent, probably in this draft. He's my number six corner overall. Wiggins was number one. So Ravens hit the jackpot at corner. The last thing you want to do is stick Tampa on the bench for even 1 year. I mean, I'd love to see him get close to 200 snaps this year. I don't think he'll get more than that, unless there's an injury, obviously, and he gets forced under trial by fire. But I'd love to see him get enough rotational play that you kind of get a sense of who he has on under real live fire considerations, not just the preseason. But that said, preseason, 100% important. It's one of the most important players on the team for the preseason is TJ Tampa, in terms of trying to figure out what he is and trying to see what kind of a live fire role he's ready for.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see how deep that rotation goes, because, you know, this is still a team that's trying to win it all. You know, they're still looking to be one of the best teams, if not the best team in the NFL. So they're only going to experiment, but so much before they start going with what they feel like is working. So how much of a leash does TJ Tampa get? If you think back to kind of the rookie year, Pepe Williams and Jalen Armour Davis, they didn't get long. You know, those guys, I think back to that New England game.
New England, yep.
and you didn't see much of the Jalen Armour Davis much more. And that was for a variety of reasons, for lack of him being able to show something on the field and just because he couldn't stay healthy. But I think they have shown that, especially at that position, because if you're struggling at that position, most likely you're giving up big plays, you're giving up points. They're just not going to allow that to go on, but for so long. So yeah, preseason will be very important for a TJ Tampa to kind of start gaining these guys' trust.
All right. Well, let's get back to Stevens. Tell me what a good season looks like to you from Brandon Stevens.
Honestly, I would say a good season for Stevens is to kind of duplicate what he did last year. Maybe his good run extends into November, you know, maybe late November. And he's kind of doing the same things he was doing last year. He starts shadowing teams' best receivers at times. He starts making some plays on the ball. But I would say he had a good season last year. I would equate him doing pretty much mirroring last year. For me, I would say that's a good season for him, playing every game, staying healthy, not being overly penalized, making plays in the run game. Like, just being consistent is a good year for me with him.
I'm with you on that. I said never challenge for the right corner job. I think that's kind of important because, I mean, it could be Humphrey and Wiggins are the guys that the Ravens think are their best two, and it could be they kind of slip him back into this role where they need him at safety and they mm-hmm. could actually use him there, and they do it. I don't think that's good for Stevens. If I were Stevens, last thing I'd want is moving out of right corner. I'd want right corner and say, you know, put a stake in the ground. That's my job. That's what I'm going to get paid for. Don't move me around to three different positions this year. You'd really be doing me a disservice. I think you'd have an unhappy player on your hand if that happened again. I don't think he was well served, as most of the players on the Ravens who've ever had to play multiple positions and haven't been superstars like Hamilton.
Yeah.
They don't do well with multiple positions. Kamalai Correa did not do well with multiple positions. And Stevens as well has been, I think his growth is a little stunted by not just being put at corner. But other than that, I want level of play consistent with the entirety of 2023. So take the average of when he was good and when he wasn't that good at the end of the year. If he could do that again for the whole year, that'd be terrific. I'd also like to see the contract never to become a distraction during the mm-hmm. season. And the way it could become a distraction is probably not because the Ravens and he can't come to an agreement. It's because he's not happy with his positional role and how that's going to affect how he gets paid.
Yeah. And simply just maybe a bad game. You know, you go up, you say they play the Bengals and Higgins is, you know, giving them problems or something like that. You don't want it to all of a sudden get to a situation where you feel like every game is a contract negotiation. That's the problem for the young guy. So just stay the course, stay consistent. That he showed that he can be a consistent player last year for them. I think if he can do that again, that'd be great for him.
All right, let's talk about what a great season would look like to you.
Great season for me starts with the turnovers, man. I want to get back to seeing cornerbacks force turnovers. I miss the days of seeing corners get the interceptions because, you know, this is a guy that was a former running back in college as well. So I want to see Stevens get the ball in his hands a couple of times, show those ball skills, see what you can do in the open field when you do force the turnover. He's a big body guy, and I want to see him maybe steal a page out of Marlon Humphrey's book from a couple of years ago and, hey, force some fumbles. Like, he's close enough to the action. He's involved in the screens. He's involved in the run game. He's a big physical presence. Force some turnovers, man. That's the big thing for me. He's shown me that he can cover in the short to intermediate and even in some cases down the field. Now I want to see him start making impact plays on the game. He's shown that he can kind of be that quiet guy and do his job and get off the field. Now I want to see him start to make some noise in these games.
All right. That's good and impassioned in terms of wanting the turnovers there. I want to see him adapt to the changes from McDonald at Orr's scheme. And he's going to adapt best if the changes are minimal. If those safeties stay healthy and they can find that guy for the split field role, get Hamilton to do the kind of thing he did, just take away the strong side of the field. It's going to be a lot more pressure on a player like Stevens to lock down his man. He'll have some help over the top from 32, but he'll still be targeted a lot under those circumstances. I think if Hamilton is playing slot corner a lot on the other side. I think that he has to adapt to that. I want to see a level of play closer to the first 12 games than the last six he did last year. And you know, the other thing I'd like to see is I think if he was re-signed, probably will happen no later than the regular season. If he was re-signed, I think it would be a good indicator that he's having a big year. If he's re-signed during the year, it'll be a great indicator he's having mm-hmm. a good year. And if not, generates a valuable comp pick. Hopefully the Ravens can make do without him. But you know, Brandon Stevens, I have a hard time projecting a much better year for him than he had last year.
All right.
He is one of those players who he just improved so much. Mm-hmm. I think he and Linderbaum in a case are guys who really need to consolidate their gains in a sense. And in each case, well, in Steven's case, it's about getting paid right now. In Linderbaum's case, there might be another jump ready for him. I just don't know that it's going to happen this year.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. I mean, look, it's a lot of turnover on that offensive line. So we'll see with Linderbaum, but he's definitely got the talent and the smarts and the maturity. So I definitely believe that he's got another leap in him this year. I just wonder how much the moving pieces around him will impact him, and not just him, but maybe even Ronnie as well. Some of these guys, the two staples that he and Ronnie are now on this offensive line, they're going to have three new faces going along with them. So that the offensive line is the only group where it's truly a chain, you know, where it's truly one link breaks and the whole thing could fall apart. So I'm curious to see what those three vacant spots look like and how it does impact them. But I do think the world of Linderbaum.
All right. All right. Always an incredible pleasure to talk football with you, Cordell, whenever we get the chance. I love having those bouncy discussions when we have a chance for a little more time on air. Tell folks where they can find anything you're doing online, talk to you online, and where they can hear you on 105.7.
Yeah, I appreciate the invite, Ken, as always, man. Always love talking football with you. People can find me on social media at Cordell Woodland, just how it's spelled. And you can catch my show, Shaking It Up Sports, on 105.7 The Fan. Download the Odyssey app. You can check me out anywhere, even if you're not in Maryland. Obviously, the Orioles baseball season is going on right now, so I'm covering them as well, covering the Ravens with OTAs right now, getting ready to wrap up, and mini camp right around the corner. So the time of year where I'm juggling both teams is happening now. So you'll hear a lot of me on the station.
Jealous as hell of your job, Cordell. You certainly have a great job covering the Orioles and Ravens. Those are my two teams, of course, and I'm loving life when I have the overlap of these seasons.
Yeah.
Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. Look for the Recollection series. Just tell me the player you want. I'll set him aside for you. Somebody picked James Hurst today. That's going to be a good discussion.
Yeah.
Great choice of player there. But Cordell, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study. We'll be right back.